The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Thursday, the 2nd of September, 2021, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. And I have a quick message to start off the show from the Ministry of Finance. Did you know that the Public Procurement Act took effect September 1st, 2021? And suppliers and vendors interested in doing business with the government will have to register on the electronic procurement platform in order to bid on jobs. Register your business today at suppliers.gov.bs. If you need help registering your business on the e-procurement portal, contact the help desk at 604-1049 or 604-1056. This message is brought to you by the Ministry of Finance. Well, good morning to my audience. First of all, I want to start the show by saying thank you to my texters and my audience yesterday. In particular, you kept that text line hot. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time to read every single text, but I think all of the views shared were reflected in the conversation that we had. And by the texts that were read, I also want to say good morning to another cousin from another mother, Leah Aeneas, my sister in from the spot, who welcomed me into the fold. I want to say good morning. And for those of you who want to wish Leah a personal happy birthday, the visa to drive all the way out west has been waived for Leah's birthday. So y'all make sure I give our friend Leah Aeneas a happy birthday today. Another quick note to the political party that erected the third billboard at the Johnson Road, Eastern Road intersection. Let me give you a little political campaigning advice and help. See, it's obvious that you don't know anything about that community. If you could put that third billboard right there. You see, the first two billboards are already pushing the limit of safety. See, if you grew up in the community that I grew up in, near the Johnson Road, Eastern Road intersection, then you will remember that before the major roadworks that took place and the renovation of that intersection was one of the most deadly intersections in New Providence. You see, the reason why I have a passion for traffic management is better better driving is because where I live, I used to hear the traffic accidents from my house. In fact, one night a friend dropped me home and I admonished them to go straight home because I didn't think they should go back to the bar to drink. And they left the corner to go back to the bar and drink and got licked by a car. So you see, the people who live in that community and work in that community understand the value of the renovation and the roadworks that took place there. They understand how many lives were saved and how many accidents were avoided by opening up the roadway in a way that allowed the drivers in Johnson Road to see what was coming from the east, westward-bound traffic, right? Around what was a blind curve, and it allows the people on the Eastern Road who don't like to slow down, even though they're approaching an intersection, it allows them to see who is attempting to exit Johnson Road onto the Eastern Road. But you see now, this third billboard you put up, the first two, while they are an eyesore, they don't interfere with traffic or the driver's ability to see what's happening around them. But this third billboard clearly blocks the view of the drivers heading westbound on Eastern Road and the drivers exiting Johnson Road. And so I leave you with this quick message. Take it down forthwith. Take it down. The residents of this community begged the MP to find a solution to create safer roads. And for the sake of your political campaign, you think you're going to endanger the lives of Bahamians generally and the people in that community specifically? I think not. I think you've taken this politics game too far. I think y'all think the country belongs to y'all, that the government is yours to win, that the people's lives are yours to control for your own aim. See, I don't have a problem with any particular political party. I have a problem with the entire political culture that continues to prioritize politicians, and may I note, mediocre, lackluster, incompetent politicians over the lives and needs of ordinary citizens who are the root of the whole purpose for your political system. So when I go to the inside of the Guardian on page A5 and I see this headline that says government committed to long-term reconstruction of Abaco and Grand Bahama, I have to ask the question, well, what else you was gonna do? What else you was gonna do with my money and the people's money? You gonna let Abaco and Grand Bahama rot? That's what you gonna do? You suggesting that you're committed to long-term reconstruction of Abaco and Grand Bahama as if it is a gift? As if it is something for you to promise and not an obligation? Understand, if you're offering yourself for governance, this is a duty. This is an obligation. This is what you've been put there for. Nothing more, nothing less. It's not your country, it's our country. So again, I want to say, in case you forgot, I ain't for or against any political party. I am deeply concerned about and invested in deconstructing the negative political cultures that continue to drive us down and diminish our capacity for development and success. And that is just a word. It is now time for me to move in to my first segment of the day. I am pleased to have another political candidate on the show. And I'm pleased because I am always excited when political candidates and politicians are eager to engage the public. And not just the voting public, but the members of their constituency and the members of the country generally. So I want to say good morning to Ms. Ginger Moxie. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Erin. How are you?
I am good, thank you. How are you?
Good. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Ginger, yes. you represent Pine Ridge constituency.
I represent Pine Ridge, yes, for the Progressive Liberal Party.
Absolutely. So tell me, yes. What is unique about Pine Ridge in the Bahamian archipelago?
What is unique about Pine Ridge is that it is actually it represents like the city of Freeport. And so Freeport, of course, was established in 1955 by an agreement between the government and a company called the Grand Mountain Port Authority. And that's where the city of Freeport was formed. Pine Ridge encompasses an area called Hawksbill that comes from the Hawksbill Creek Agreement. Mm-hmm. And it also includes the downtown area. It includes a lot of the urban communities. It's the area where the hospital is. It's the area where the airport is. And of course, we have challenges with all of these right now. And so it is kind of like the heart of Grand Bahama Island. It's where a lot of the small businesses are. And so it plays a key role in the future development of the island.
Absolutely. So I have a quick question here about the Port Authority. And so right. The question is, what are some of the ways that the government and citizens can leverage our relationship with the Grand Bahama Port Authority to better support personal and community development on Grand Bahama first and the wider country second?
Okay, so glad you asked that. I used to actually be vice president of the Grand Bahama Port Authority. And I left there about 7 years ago to form a nonprofit organization and a social enterprise to help people in need and to cause Bahamians to get into business and to help to assist in creating entrepreneurs. And so I kind of know a lot about how the Port Authority works. What I believe needs to happen is there has to be more of a collaborative effort. And there also has to be accountabilities, I think, on all sides of the divide. And so there are things that I believe that the Port Authority can do that are not necessarily being done. And there's also things that the government can work together with the Port Authority to allow to happen. When I was there, I was kind of considered the voice of the people around the table because I recognize when certain things can be done, and I worked towards trying to make certain things happen and making it easy for Bahamians to get into business, trying to find ways to lower the cost of getting into business and all that. But I think the key is really collaborating on some big ticket issues, because right now, you know, we have an airport that was the government purchased for a dollar. But what the government did was they assumed the cost of all of the severance pay. And I can't understand how something like that would happen. But we as a government need to be able to negotiate better on behalf of the people, because these costs, I think, the Bahamian people will end up paying these costs. And so I believe that as a government who has to represent people, we have to make better decisions on behalf of the people.
Absolutely.
Right now, you can go ahead.
No, I was going to say that one of the potential ideas I see in this space is a partnership with the government, University of the Bahamas Northern Campus, and the Port Authority to create a tech incubator to provide concessions and incentives to draw young people, students, and tech businesses into Pine Ridge and that general area, and to create a tech incubator where we encourage students to work on the next big idea with the support of tech companies that we have attracted, right? We've attracted them to Grand Bahama with the aim of making Grand Bahama the tech hub of the region.
I believe that Grand Bahama, I think we have it as Innovation City in the Progressive Liberals Party's plan. But I know that, and I'm thinking you're referring to the FNM's manifesto.
No, I haven't read it yet. No.
Okay, you haven't. Okay.
Yeah, this people-centered ideas.
Oh, okay, great. So yes, with the tech hub, the thing about that is that we are actually launching something called the Digital 7700. And it involves, of course, incorporating a lot of the creatives and utilizing, you know, the relationships that we have with the Port Authority, with the locals, in order to make something special as far as technology is concerned. Grand Bahama is the ideal place to have a tech hub, an innovation city. You know about the model with Cayman Islands. We believe that because of our proximity to the U.S. and having so much of the infrastructure that's already there, that it is the ideal location for tech hub. Now, I know that this existing administration would have tried something that they started, I think, in 2017 that didn't go anywhere. But I believe that's because I don't think the right approach was taken in terms of how to get it started. And so we have, as soon as the Bahamian people allow us to have an opportunity to do this, we're going to have a critical delivery team that's responsible for executing this, what we considered our Digital 700.
Absolutely.
And it's a part of our 10-point plan.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. With the idea of Grand Bahama being the sort of tech station of the archipelago or the tech hub of the, how will you at the constituency or community level, right, or island level, and at a national level, right, how will you balance development and environmental stewardship?
From a tech, as far as the technology is concerned?
Well, in terms of industry, how are you going to ensure that we are always balancing the needs of the development space, but also the need to preserve and protect the environment?
Okay, so as Freeport is quite unique because of the Hospital Creek Agreement and the Port Authority.
Mm-hmm.
There were some Freeport bylaws that I think were, there were some recommendations for the environment
mm-hmm.
that I'm not sure where it's at right now, but they have been lingering for a while in terms of being approved by the government. And I think that's something that is critical, I think, in moving forward to ensure that there is that balance of development and you know, preserving the environment. One thing, I'm sorry, I know we went straight into it, but one thing that I wanted to say, and you do realize that today is day two of the anniversary of Dorian, the landfall here on Grand Bahama.
Yes, ma'am.
So, yeah, because Dorian sat over us for like 48 hours.
Yes, ma'am.
And today is actually the memorial. It's actually going on right now. So I'm not sure how long our call is going to be. But it's the funeral of Billy Roll, who's one of the rescuers of, on the jet ski with all of the you know,
yes.
the victims of Dorian. And so I'm only saying that to say I just at the onset I just wanted to recognize like the moment we are in right now because there are so many emotional people just reliving everything that we've experienced over the past. 2 years and it's still going. And so I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. Absolutely. And it's an important note. So I got a couple of texts here, but I want to ask you a quick question. As a person seeking to represent and to lead members, you know, residents in this community, do you feel like you have an obligation to help to create and grow disaster resilient citizens, and how do you do that?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what this is an idea that I had for a while, and it's about not just reconstructing for resiliency, but being resilient ready. And when I say that, the Grand Bahama, the Freeport area anyway, is ideally suited to have disaster relief type supplies, equipment, and all that, and to have it in an area that's known as a bonded area. And what that means is that for the entire Caribbean that's so prone to hurricanes, we can have all of these equipment that is right here on Grand Bahama Island. It's injection into the local community and all that. But we can have them here readily available for just-in-time distribution throughout the Caribbean. So when we know that a hurricane, you know, is on the way on whatever, that we have right after it passes, we can start mobilizing with supplies and all that right from Grand Bahama Island.
Absolutely.
And because we have experienced so many hurricanes, you know, Francis and Jane and Wilma and Dorian and Matthew. And we've been devastated, I would think, more than any other island in the Bahamas. So what better place to have these equipment and supplies that are readily available that can also benefit the Grand Bahama economy at the same time?
Absolutely.
And so we're talking about these international organizations. I've done a lot of trade missions and all that, taking groups to do collaborations with other businesses, other enterprises.
Okay.
So I believe that we can utilize Freeport as that place that kind of that services the entire Bahamas and the Caribbean to be more resilient.
Hurricane and storm resilient.
Disasters. Yes.
Absolutely. So I've got a quick text here from residents in Pine Ridge. And the text says, morning, Ms. Green and guest. I live in Hudson Estates, Pine Ridge, Freeport for over 30 years. This area needed paved roads for over 30 years. Also, other residential areas like Fiddler Green, Ringwood Drive, etc. Why do these areas remain the same? From Grand Bahama. Grand Bahama have so many derelict areas and no further developments after Haywood and St. George died. Why no improvement, only promises? From Grand Bahama, we are listening. But I think the second part of that text, I want to have a whole show about it. So we get to that. But how can you help our residents? How can you support the community development of infrastructure?
Okay, so the areas that you mentioned, they mentioned, Hudson Estate, Fiddler, Ringwood Drive. Actually, I live on Ringwood Drive. But these areas are known, they are private subdivisions. And so the original agreement that was signed has, you know, stipulations where the developer is responsible for the roads and, and the water and stuff like that. I believe that there's a way around these in that we have to come together more, I think, as a community and make some of these things happen. Also, in terms of, I love to use the word collaboration. We have to be able to collaborate with the regulators, that is the Grand Bahama Port Authority, with you know, the private developer. And as residents, we need to be more vocal in these things. Now, Ringwood Drive, where I am at, it's been like this for many, many years. But again, I think that with the platform that I hope to have, it'll give me an opportunity to agitate more on behalf of the people in these communities to make these things happen.
Absolutely. We're almost out of time. And I want you to share with the people how they can get in contact with you and then give you an opportunity to answer a question I didn't ask, is how has your campaign strategy changed during the pandemic? So how can people get in touch with you if they want to ask questions, if they want to support the movement, or if they want to tell you what they're upset about?
Okay. So they can get in contact with me. I'm actually right next to the Port Authority building downtown. So we're opposite Wendy's. That's where the office is. We're open 7 days a week. There's also the number is 816-VOTE. So that's how you reach us. And in terms of, I missed the other.
Well, it was
question.
Just.
You asked about contact, and then.
And then I imagine that the pandemic has changed the way that you campaign.
Yes,
so what are the new ways that they can engage with you?
Yes. Okay. So it has changed it because we were out there, you know, nonstop, just moving about and seeing people. Now with the restrictions in terms of those who are vaccinated, those who are not, and all that, we've been moving in smaller
circles.
Size. But we have changed it a bit. We do a lot more social media. We are available to communicate, you know, on the phone. So we're calling up a lot of people. We are still doing our door-to-door, you know, and we are reaching those in need, because the thing about it is so many people are hurting, and we have found ways to connect to try to see if we could bring some relief.
Absolutely.
To those that need it.
Absolutely.
So we're busy. We're busy. We have an exciting campaign. We have a lot of young people involved in it. Mm-hmm. We call them ginger volunteers, because they're all volunteering.
But they better be giving out ginger snap cookies.
Yeah. And our people are service-minded people. All of our team members, I wouldn't say all, but the majority have been involved in Dorian Relief.
Awesome.
Fixing people rooftops, saving lives, distributing goods. And I do have a nonprofit organization, and that's what we've been doing from day one, before Dory, from Matthew. And
forward.
The organization has existed for 7 years, 700 partners. So we're busy, and we believe that the people understand when you have a person of action, because that's what I'm about. I'm about executing. You know, you can... present all of these wonderful plans, but how are you going to get it done?
Well,
who are you going to be collaborating with to make it happen?
Who's absolutely
going to be listening to you?
Ms. Moxie, I'm almost out of time, and I think I got a caller here. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk to a caller.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Good morning, caller. You still there? I am so sorry we missed that call, Ginger.
Oh, sorry.
No.
I talk too much.
That's no. Well, I will say that.
But I am action, okay? I don't talk too much. I'm action.
Well, what I want to say is I hope that you don't stop talking after the vote. I know that we're all out of time and I have another segment to move into.
Okay.
But stay tuned to the show because you'll hear some of the questions I have, you know, that I have for all of the candidates
as
the show goes, as we lead into the election. And I hope that these questions help all candidates prepare for that day. So thank you again, Ms. Go on.
And it's being recorded. Can I come back to it only because I have to go to the funeral?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'll start at 10.
Absolutely. So thank you very much.
Okay.
You please go and attend to that. And remember, if you want to contact Ms. Ginger Moxie and her election team, you can call 816-VOTE. 816-VOTE. Thank you so much, Ms. Moxie. And
thank you.
You're welcome. We're about to head into a break, so please stay tuned to 96.9 FM Guardian Radio. And on the other side of the break, we'll be back on the clock.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It is Thursday, the 2nd of September, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. I just want to, before I move into the next segment, read some of these texts. Great show as usual. Question, how come no one even Brave Davis picked up that there's a 90% chance on there not being an election because the PM intentionally, we don't know if he intentionally did it, placed the election September 16th, knowing for over 20 years, like clockwork, there will be a hurricane, which proved the PM is more clever than brave. Texter, you caused me wanted to reach out and touch my 10-10, the Bible 10, for assurance. Another text, serious Erin, all those billboards in that area need to be down, blocking view in an already hard-to-traverse area. I really expect agents from the police, from works, and from transport to go out there and assess the site before right-thinking people have to take it down for the sake of the community. Another text, preach, Ms. Green, preach. Not too much. I run myself hot a little earlier ago. A good morning. My second guest today is Dr. Chris Curry, and we are going to be talking about the Vanguard Party and the Black Liberation Movement in the Bahamas. Good morning, Dr. Curry.
Morning, Erin. It's great to be on your show.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure to have you here today. You see, a lot of people accuse me of being a PLP, right? Because I come from a family of people who always vote PLP. But for me, I care less about political parties, and I'm more concerned about political ideologies, political identities, and political culture. And so when people come to me and say things like, you use PLP or use FNM, I often ask them, what's the difference? Because as far as I'm concerned, they really are just the same party with very slight nuances and differences. And so I've invited you today to help me figure that out, but also because two Sundays ago, the Bahamas National Reparations Committee hosted a panel discussion entitled The Vanguard Party and the Black Liberation Movement in the Bahamas. And so I partook in, I listened to, I wasn't really a part of the discussion, I was in the Facebook feed just tuning in, but I listened to a lot of the discussion, and in that discussion, you realize how different the Vanguard Party was from the parties we have today, but how the Vanguard Party isn't necessarily as radical as people try to make it out to be. So I want you, I'm gonna beg you to tell us what the Vanguard Party was, and who founded it, and what its political ideology is.
So the Vanguard Party was founded in 1972 by a group of activists who were formerly a part of a group called UNICOM, which was often referred to as our community. They weren't an actual political party, but they were advocates for change in 71 and into 72. But a few members of that group, UNICOM, eventually did form the Vanguard Party in 1972. And the main leaders was Dr. John McCartney, Lionel and Wallace Carey, who are still around, as well as Charles Fox, who is also still alive. And those persons, along with others, really, really tried to address some foundational issues that were emerging in the early 70s, that there was a political change with the 67 election, but from their vantage point, they did not see the social economic system that had been dominated for centuries by the mercantile elite, the Bay Street Boys, not really changing. And so they were advocating for a revolution of sorts through a democratic process, mind you, so that there would be a way of addressing the inequalities that persisted in the Bahamas in the early 70s and 80s. So that was really what they were all about. They did practice or espouse the foundational principles of democratic socialism. And in that respect, the Vanguard Party represented an alternative to the other parties at the time, which were the FNM, the PLP, and the BDP, pardon me. And the idea was they believed that democratic socialism was the best way of alleviating the chasm between the have and the have-nots. Mind you, if you look at their 10-point plan, and their 10-point plan is really articulated well by John McCartney in a 1999 article in the New Political Science Journal, where he basically talks about comparing the Vanguard Party to the Black Panther Party. And one of the things that he makes in point number five is that they were advocating for a mixed economy, a mixed economy. So those who thought of the Vanguard Party as this really wild left-wing communist party is actually quite wrong. They were advocating for a democratic socialist system in which there would be a mixed economy. And they thought that was the best system for the Bahamas.
Now, let me ask you a quick question. So the Vanguard Party would have been a democratic socialist party, right?
Yes.
How do we identify the FNM and PLP of that day and the FNM and PLP today?
So in the political spectrum, you have on one end extreme left wing, on the other end extreme right wing. If we were to place the PLP and the FNM in the 70s and to an extent even today on the political spectrum, the PLP would land left of center, and the FNM would land right of center. What we're saying, and if you talk to PLPs from back in the day, till now, they will tell you that the PLP was left of center, but the Vanguard Party was the only real party that was offering a real left-wing progressive agenda. All right. And so that is where the Vanguard Party was advocating community outreach programs. They tailored a lot of their ideas off of the Black Panther Party. So they were giving access to soup kitchens and feeding their communities. They had their own liberation school. They were advocating for universal free education. They were advocates of healthcare being freed from costly payments, etc. And they were also, this is very interesting, Aaron, they were advocating for a universal income tax in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. Look at that. I want to ask I was going to ask my producer to play some Blaxploitation music so we could sort of highlight that point, right? Like, look how far into the future these guys actually were.
Yeah, it's amazing. The things that they were advocating for are some of the things that we're only now just starting to talk about. So they were, pardon the pun, they were in the vanguard of change in the 70s. But unfortunately, the party was emerging at a time when there was hostility towards left parties. Obviously, this is at the height of the Cold War. And then you had the Flamingo incident in 1980.
Yeah.
And then a year later, the Grenada coup.
Uh-huh.
And then you had, of course, tumult in Jamaica because of Manley's experiment with democratic socialism, which many people think led to rapid inflation in Jamaica. And so there was a Red Scare. There was a Red Scare in the Bahamas. And people really stigmatized unfairly, the Vanguard Party.
Okay, so I got a couple of questions. I want to ask this question, right? So you listed off a number of impactful and important moments in regional political history, right? The tumult in Cuba, Grenada, Jamaica. So let me ask you a question. Is it that all of this, that the political environment changed so drastically that there's no longer any that type of foreign interference? Or is it that the political ideologies that we continue to elect to government cannot see this engagement as interference? And is it about the ideology itself, right, that the parties are rooted in?
I hate to say this, but we have not matured in a country to really grasp and appreciate the nuance of ideology as being an important foundational sort of step for parties. We still are largely at a place where we're electing people based on personalities rather than platform or policy.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue because the two main parties are very close to the center, I agree, or I would suggest that the PLP is left of center, FNM right of center, but you have two centrist parties. And so while you could make an argument that the PLP tends to advocate for more social services and assisting people, generally speaking, through their programs, and the FNM tends to adopt a more laissez-faire and conservative approach to managing governance and allowing businesses essentially to operate and run their own affairs with a little interference from the government. Those kind of distinctions, as nuanced as they may be, speak to really a party system that is still very much in the middle, in the center. And so really since the Vanguard Party fell apart and was dismantled in 1987, we really haven't had a viable left party to speak of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So the Vanguard Party is a democratic socialist party, right? We see the presence of now in the sort of modern Bahamas, the African People's Socialist Party, who is represented in the Bahamas by Alex Morley, right?
Yes, in 2017, I think he ran in the constituency of Angleston,
right,
unsuccessfully. But that was a moment, and I would argue that his party probably borrowed some of the ideas from the Black Liberation Movement of the 60s, from the Black Panther Party, and perhaps even was inspired by the Vanguard Party itself.
All right, outside of the African People's Socialist Party, do we have any other parties that we say are radical, don't follow the traditional centrist politic and I mean capitalist aligned politic? Is there, has there been the presence of any other party that has sort of stepped out of the norm?
I will just say I listened very intently to the Open Parliament and the speakers that spoke on that occasion. And I'm going to be honest, there was only small shifts or differences between the those parties that spoke that day. I did not see any significant policy difference between the different parties that were speaking at that time. And this is the problem. We don't have parties that are framing their entire platform along positions on policy. A lot of times they're seen as populist and centrist. They don't really address fundamental issues that are related to any kind of ideological basis. So what I'm arguing is most of the parties, third parties, all the way down the line, they appear to be saying the same kind of thing. Their messaging sounds the same thing. They talk about diversifying the economy. They talk about the corruption of the two legacy parties. They talk a little bit about, of course, COVID-19 and what to do with that. There's some subtle differences, but it often seems as the difference is only how loud you can speak in the rhetoric you use, as opposed to actually differences in policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what's fascinating for me, because now we see this United Coalition Party, right? Mm-hmm. And we see independents like Houston Moultrie, that would have moved from the FNM to become an independent and then sort of join this coalition. And I think Moultrie is, I'd call him an independent because I don't think he necessarily aligns with the FNM's foundational ideology, right? Yeah. Then we have elements of the Bahamas Constitution Party, along with a chairman from Operation National Rescue, which is, as far as I'm concerned, is bordering on a xenophobia advocacy group.
At least fascism at some level, right, because of the way they have very extreme views on minority groups and immigrants.
Right. So, and then you can see there are elements of other third parties that didn't make it on their ticket in this coalition. How difficult is it going to be for a coalition to manage a campaign, although the government made it easy for them by shortening the amount of time they have to campaign, but how difficult is it going to be for a coalition party to campaign with so many disparate and differing ideologies? And how is it, how difficult, or what will they need to focus on to be able to govern as a coalition? And that's speaking specifically to the United Coalition Party, because I'm not sure that the Coalition of Independence is a coalition in the traditional sense.
Well, again, the snap election kind of forced their hand, and they didn't have the benefit of having a convention.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the benefit, I guess, of even creating a brand. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the benefit of creating a slogan, it seems. I don't see a slogan. We see slogans for the two major parties. I'm not seeing a slogan for these newly formed parties.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have clearly within this configuration, persons at the very top who have very different views on COVID. For example, mm-hmm. one of the leader, I believe Cassius Stewart, is for vaccinations and I guess the kind of a standard approach to the pandemic that you would expect from someone who's thinking about the medical side of things. And then you have Ali McIntosh, who's advocating alternative approaches to the pandemic outside of vaccination. So already at that level, you have a difference. But I guess the common cause is to try and defeat the FNM and to distance themselves from the PLP. And they're riding on that being enough for voters to carry them through to the election. So again, you don't really have a well, in my opinion, a well thought out platform because you have in the group dissenting voices and dissent over major issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, you made a point there that the group, like, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but that their major aim, like the common denominator or their identity, is only rooted in defeating the PLP and the FNM. And is that sufficient ideology or identity to validate you as a political party, or movement?
It's very shallow personal politics. It's not ideologically based, because if it was, then you would have a concerted effort to have an alignment of all of your candidates towards a particular view or position on each of these very important national issues.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have that. What you have is, we don't like the PLP. That's why we don't like them. We don't like the FNM. That's why we don't like them.
Yeah.
You know? And so I need to know, what is your vision? What is your plan for healthcare? What is your plan for the environment? What is your plan for the economy? What is your plan to deal with constitutional issues? You know, and how is that all aligned to a singular ideological framework? That's not there. And I don't see that. I'm being critical, but I really want our listeners to think about, what is it that we have in the bombs as it relates to political parties and ideology?
Absolutely.
Do we have a party that has aligned itself with an ideological framework that is progressive, okay, that stands on particular issues? For example, gender equality to me seems like a huge issue in our country, right? Going mm-hmm. back to the failed referendums and all of that. Do we have a party that its main plank, its main platform is gender equality or equality and human rights in general?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think any single party in the country has been able or has committed to looking at the human rights question, because they only see it as politically inexpedient, right? Because whenever right. it arises, they only see the Haitian situation or the gay people looking for rights or the non-Christians trying to barge into their country. When in fact, this particular pandemic, the state of emergency and the application of restrictions and laws is a fundamental human rights issue. How we prepare for the hurricane season and how we restore and provide relief. These are all rooted in human rights issues. I ran on.
No, and you know, and we're in a moment in our country's history right now where we have the state basically engaged in voter suppression. And we have people who aren't going to be voting because they're students
mm-hmm.
or because they weren't on the 2017 register, or maybe they're on the 2017 register, but they were displaced because of Dorian
mm-hmm.
and they live in a house where they don't actually own a utility bill because they're living with family.
Mm-hmm.
So they're being disenfranchised. And this is the state that is engaging in voter suppression. This is a human rights violation.
Absolutely.
And so you know, I'm critical because I see this as a glaring problem in our political system, that we don't have parties that are tackling the big issues front on,
mm-hmm.
and that we're still really campaigning on personality, you know, who could dance on stage, who could say the quickest and smoothest one-liner for the party.
Yeah.
You know, and we're still campaigning on loud music and motorcades and pom-poms.
Absolutely. And undefendable statements on the campaign stage. In fact, I got two callers, Chris, and we can get to the callers before the end of the show. I want to make this point. Like, it's so terribly disappointing to see the prime minister launching into what we sort of call gutter politics on the political stage, right? His headline.
Major mudslinging. Yeah.
In the Guardian today, PM says PLP would destroy economy with quote unquote shady deals. But I just want to do a little segue to sort of this question of political identity. See, because for many people in the country, the political identity of the PLP is they are the ones that brought us through to majority rule and independence. For many people in the country, the PLP's political identity is that they are a corrupt and shifty party, and that's all they is. And neither of these two can be true in their entirety, right? Like, neither of them could be true as an absolute truth. And not only that, like, over time, these these truths change. But I think it's important to point out that is the PLP a party of shady deals because the prime minister says they are on a stage, right? Or are we going to rely on the mechanisms that we have available to us in the parliamentary system to determine whether these things are true or not? But I just wanted to put that in there about how even the FNM at this point doesn't seem to have a political identity. But let's get to the caller. That was just me pontificating for a second. Caller, you on the clock. Good morning, caller. You on the clock. You still there? I'm sorry, we lost you. Next caller, Kermit. Caller, you on the clock. Good morning, caller. You still there? I guess not. Thought I heard something in the background. Let's get back to the conversation, Dr. Curry. I got another quick question to ask you before we go. One of the texters said to ask you if you've ever read or listened to the black activist Professor Thomas Sowell. But I got another important question here. So apparently in 2011, a Mr. Charles Fox, who was a journalist and businessman, resurrected the old socialist value. Fox said he intended to bring back the left-leaning party's old slogan, dare to struggle, dare to win. And he says, although the words socialist and nationalist will be dropped. So a couple of questions. Was the revival successful? And secondly, how you could have a vanguard party if you drop the word socialist and nationalist?
Well, I would say that it wasn't successful. From my understanding, outside of the Workers' Party, and of course, you know, the labor movement, which oftentimes will oscillate between various parties, and we're seeing that even now as we speak, there really hasn't been a concerted effort to address the laboring class, workers' rights, and issues that would align with what many would consider a socialist democratic system. So I would say really the Vanguard Party, truth be told, was probably the last time that we saw a true left party in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And what I would love to see is a party emerge that has some connections to the left, but is aligned around specific policies and principles as an ideological frame. And as I close, I want to end by saying, Aaron, mm-hmm. that mudslinging is not going to cut it. I don't believe that our electorate today is satisfied with mudslinging, especially when your slogan is about the future, but you spend in your time talking about the past and mudslinging about the party that you're competing against and their past misdeeds, rather than presenting your future plan for the Bahamian people and explaining what you plan to do in the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. Curry, this conversation has not ended here. I'm going to bring you back on for part two because I think these are some of the conversations that Bahamians should be having before a general election. And understanding political identity and political ideology and how it frames out a party's ability to deliver and produce good governance is so important. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Aaron.
Absolutely. Get yourself prepared because for the next conversation, I have a texter here that asks, what do you think of KGM? I've got another texter who says that they disagree with you. We have free education from preschool to tertiary. Free education to economic empowerment and self-improvement just need to insert self-help. Another quick text, exactly my point. What about my future? Another text, and quickly as we go, PLP and FNM is completely different, like yin and yang. For example, the PLP is take and the FNM is give. Now, don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with taking, but in life, you have to give a little sometimes. Anyway, that is my music. Thank you, Kermit. That means Levon Miller and Unleashed is up next at 11 o'clock. So stay tuned to Guardian Radio and have a great day, Bahamas.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.